So I guess we can just jump right into it. So for most Alaskans, the PFD is a, you know, it's a check you get in the mail at the end of the year. And, you know, maybe it's a couple, you know, a few, maybe a few $1,000 if you're really lucky. And it helps out with things. It's nice to have that money. Maybe, you know, maybe you buy yourself a nice bike or something. But I think what a lot of people don't see is this mechanism, that the fact that, like, it's not as if there's just, like, it's not as simple as, like, the state just provides you with a lump sum of money. There's, like, a lot that goes into operating the fund and where that money comes from. So I guess, can you just sort of give a layman's rundown of what your company is and how it fits into, you know, the check that people receive at the end of the year?
Sure. So, you know, the Alaska Permanent Fund itself is getting ready. We're getting ready to celebrate 45 years of the fund. It was created by the voters in November of 1976, and the first deposit was made in 1977, and it was small. It was $734,000, and it was really the start of collecting a portion of that royalty income off the pipeline to save it for to create intergenerational wealth. In around 1980, the legislature created the Permanent Fund Corporation, and our job is to manage the funds entrusted to us. So we manage the Permanent Fund. We also manage the money for Mental Health Trust Authority, and it is that mechanism and it is that responsibility that we work on. So we spend our time investing the monies that we receive through that royalty collection. We invest it across different asset classes. So we'll allocate a portion to stocks, to bonds, to things like real estate, private equity, and all of that is going to generate a return, right? And it's going to generate income. So, for example, you collect rent off of an office building that you own, that's collecting income. And that income gets deposited into the earnings reserve account. That's what the legislature created to collect all of the earnings of the fund until they are appropriated. So that earnings reserve account stays invested just like the fund in, and it owns a piece of every asset, just like the principal of the fund. And as I said, as we sell assets for profit, that profit goes to the earnings reserve account. So all of that is invested and managed by the people here at the Permanent Fund Corporation. And then the legislature uses what is now called the percent of market value. So they take a percent calculated off the average value of the fund, and it's that entire amount being managed, except for the mental health trust monies. And they take that amount and they deposit it into the state's general fund, and they use a portion of that general fund then to pay the dividend.
So can you explain to me sort of like what the, if you were to just, you know, define like a very simple process, which is like where the money starts, when it enters into this this process, like when it first gets invented, and then eventually into what people are seeing in their permanent fund checks.
Sure. So the we'll start at the North Slope. We'll make it a little bit of a geography with this. Start on the North Slope, and we will pull a barrel of oil and put it into the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and the state is going to collect, as part of its lease agreement for those fields, it's going to collect royalty. In the private sector, a lot of times you think of it as rent, but it's royalties. And we're going to get paid, the state is going to receive a payment based on the agreement that they have for producing that barrel of oil. That money, 25%, at least 25% of it, must be deposited into the permanent fund. The permanent fund then takes that money and invests it across a number of different asset classes. So in this example, let's say we take it and we buy shares of Google stock with it. And Google stock then appreciates or gains in value. And we decide it's time to sell a share of that stock. And we bought it at $1 and we're now selling it for $2. We'll take that dollar of gain and that's what will be deposited in the earnings reserve account. And then that dollar of gain will be included in with all the other income that's been received. And the legislature will decide how much of that dollar they want to use. Maybe they want to use 10 cents of it to then put into a dividend check to Alaskans.
And then I take it the other 90 cents would then just be recycled into the permanent fund corporation?
It's either stays invested or it is used for state government.
I understand. So I guess my next question is, as far as what would it be like if the royalty from oil were simply distributed among Alaskans?
So we receive in royalty income each year now, it is around $300, $350 million. That's our 25%. And then the state is getting the other 75%. So that means the state's collecting a little over $1.2 billion in royalty total. And if $1,000 a person is $700 million, that would mean if everybody got royalty instead, a piece of that royalty payment each year, they would be getting about the same in terms of a dividend if the state chose to use all of it. The Constitution requires that the 25% come to us, though, and the legislature cannot divert that 25% to itself.
So if my math is right, then the people would get about the same amount of money, but the state would have substantially less funding. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess those are sort of my quick questions for like just explaining, you know, what the permanent fund is and what it does and how your corporation is involved in that process. Is there anything that you think I'm missing just to explain, you know, where the money starts and how it gets to Alaskans?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest difference historically, you know, we've had these calculations where we use income, where we use this collection of earnings, and a portion of it is been historically used for dividends. And then in 2018, the legislature adopted this percent of market value as a spending rule on the fund, and it's been. And it was also at the same around the same time that the dividends started being calculated, not in a formula, but rather as a negotiation amongst legislators. But I think the key piece in all of this, too, is to remember it was at that time that the state then became very it became very important to just regular state services, whether it's things like, you know, schools or public safety, that the permanent fund became such an important revenue source. So today we supply about 65 cents of every dollar that's being used for those essential services. So Alaskans are getting a huge benefit from the permanent fund. So while the dividend may look different than what they've seen historically, they're getting a tremendous benefit from the fund activity in terms of being able to rely on it to fund their schools and public safety, clean water, all those real essential government purpose services.
Okay. So another question I sort of wanted to ask you is that, you know, you have like some oil-rich states, and I don't mean states as in our United States sense, but states as in international governments. Some of the states in the Nordic bloc, certainly, like you have the I think it's the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund. You have these groups where they're set up to do similar things, to my understanding, to the PFC, but not quite the same in that they have a large reserve of cash that they then invest. But one thing I wanted to ask is that some of these sovereign wealth fund institutions that are based on oil in particular have sort of a degree of longevity. I think that there are some of them have just these remarkable returns. They're not tapped on any regular basis by the state. Like the wealth is just allowed to grow, and they have a tremendous impact. What I was curious about is sort of like, I mean, evidently the permanent fund corporation doesn't work quite the same way. Could you explain to me what some of those differences are between, say, like a sovereign wealth fund and something like the permanent fund corporation?
Sure. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, we think of ourselves as a sovereign wealth fund, but it is important to recognize that we fall within the sovereignty of the United States of America, right? So a lot of the tools that a sovereign like Norway or in the Middle East, like Abu Dhabi or Qatar, or if you move down to New Zealand, Australia, or to the Canadians, a lot of what you see there is that they have the full breadth of all the tools that our federal government has in terms of fiscal policy, ability to print money, ability to pull different levers on an economy to make fiscal stimulus. Alaska doesn't have, and the Permanent Fund Corporation definitely doesn't have many of those tools. And we rely on our ability to generate revenue through smart investing around the world in the global economy. But the state doesn't have the same kind of tools then to pull the levers on in quite the same way. So you could put in place a broad statewide fiscal plan, for example, but it's going to be dependent on a number of factors, including, for example, the fact that the U.S. federal government has a lot of say over resource development in the state. They set the regulatory framework in a lot of ways. They set the lands that are available to Alaska for that development in some ways. So, thinking about those tools is a really important distinction.
Okay, so I guess as a follow up to that, like, is there some sort of like, I mean, to my understanding, like the Permanent Fund Corporation has, you know, these returns on investment that come back, but to my understanding, it's been like lately in like state politics, it's the sort of thing where there's, you know, there's always a constant demand for more money, as with any, you know, balancing any sort of governmental budget. And what I'm curious about is like, what is it like are there really like avenues of opportunity to grow the Permanent Fund Corporation as far as like its investments and its subsequent returns go? Or is it just right now in a place where it has there's a lot of politics going on that can sort of get in the way of the mission?
You know, that's a really interesting question, Dylan. I think that there is possibility for the Permanent Fund to grow and for APFC to grow in terms of how it thinks about managing the fund and the best avenues for that. But we do recognize that our job is to raise the revenue, and we rely on our elected officials to decide how it's most prudently spent. The percent of market value structure really creates a balance in both giving us the certainty of knowing what that liability is going to be. In other words, we can plan over a year in advance how to make sure that payment happens in a thoughtful, prudent way. But it also gives us certainty then to make very long-term, 7-year, 10-year, 15-year investment commitments because we know that we can count on that being in place. If that were made constitutional, that would make it take a lot of the politics that you refer to and that debate off the table and create that much more certainty for us and really be able to allow the fund to truly grow in that sense, because now you would be putting very hard fences around the fund and only allowing out that which the Constitution allows out, as opposed to the potential for additional withdrawals that the legislature has right now.
So another question I'd like to ask you is that, you know, we just saw, you know, this big ongoing skirmish over whether or not the PFD would be, you know, nice and plump and extra large, or if it would be like $1,100. Can you explain sort of the difference on your end, if there is a difference as far as like that debate goes, and how, like, you know, either those outcomes would have affected your operation, or is it really the sort of thing where it's, you know, doing the will of the state government?
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion point, because the $1,100 PFD that I believe people will start getting here in mid-October is my understanding from the releases I've seen, that was money based on what was in current balances. In other words, cobbling together some general funds and some other funds, they were able to create the amount for that. So it did not require taking any additional funds outside the $3 billion that was already being drawn on to make that happen. When they talked about the larger payments, that would have required additional draws on the permanent fund. And it would not have really, we have the ability to meet what the state asks for of us, but we do think about then the long-term consequences of having to adjust our investment strategy if we no longer have the pool of assets we thought we were going to have.
In that case, like, would you say that, like, the stance of the Permanent Fund Corporation was in favor of Louise Stutes, like a $1,100 PFD, or?
The Board of Trustees has been really firm and consistent that the state live within the rule it had set with regards to draws on the permanent fund. So to the extent that they stuck with their percent of market value draw and did not require any additional monies from the permanent fund, we would have, that's consistent with where the board has stood now for the last 5 years on this.
Okay, understood. I'm going to lighten the tone of these questions a little bit here. So I must confess, I'm a Zoomer, right? I was born in 98. And I remember one of my first exposures to the PFC was, there's like a bot on Twitter that talks about like different assets that the PFC has. And I remember when, I can't remember if it was either like AMC or GameStop, but it was like one of those big stocks that people on Reddit were gaming up. And apparently there was a not insubstantial holding on the part of like the PFC on one of those. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, are you familiar with what I'm referring to, or?
I absolutely know what you are referring to, and meme stocks have created sort of these really weird dynamics. So, you know, for listeners who may not know what meme stocks are, right, meme stocks are these things that get these very heavy social media followings for no other reason than somebody says they like it and it just goes viral, right? They don't necessarily follow the fundamentals you would normally use when you're looking at purchasing stocks. And so we have a couple of index funds that we invest in that are based on small cap or mid cap U.S. domestic equity. And when you buy an index fund, you are buying a slice of every stock in that index. And what happened with GameStop is that it was in this index. It's in the Russell 3000, and we own that index, so we own GameStop. And because the stock went viral, the value went way up to the point where it was an outsized position within this index holding than we would have ever done intentionally. But because if you own the index, you have to own it in this market cap proportion rule that is set. And so we reset some of that stuff so that we wouldn't have that type of exposure. We continue to have GameStop, but it's at a much more normalized, rationalized exposure than what we had then.
I mean, what was it like? I mean, I assume at some point you must have gotten like a phone call. I don't know, maybe in the middle of the day, maybe in the middle of the night, saying, you know, the PFC has just suddenly made all this money out of nowhere on a meme stock. What was it like when you first found that out?
You know, it's one of those things where it got so much attention. We had to take an action. Normally, what you would do is these indexes reset. They might reset quarterly, they may rebalance annually, but they have a mechanism to do this naturally. But because of all the attention being paid on this particular stock and on the permanent fund, we actually had to go in and do an early rebalancing just to make sure we didn't lose and that we didn't get things really out of whack really fast. It sort of highlights one of the things that's really challenging for us here is that we are really transparent in what we hold. The fact that everybody knew we had GameStop, it comes out daily. You can see our daily balances. Also then becomes really difficult at times because we want to make sure that we are long-term investors and not overreacting in certain situations.
You said you did rebalancing. Did you effectively like sell off a lot of the GameStop while it was extremely volatile, or?
Effectively, what we did is we reset the index to its market weightings, its appropriate market weightings, and so you sold down GameStop, like I said, to rationalize it within the index. And you move on from there. So yes, we realized gains, and that's part of why we had over seven, you know, it contributed to $7 billion in income this year. But I think the GameStop position was $34 million at the end of the day.
I mean, that's certainly not insubstantial.
No. But in the scheme of the $7 billion, it was a very small piece.
Right. So another question I have to ask you, and I hope you won't roll your eyes at this one, but certainly friends my age will ask me if I asked you this. Of course, cryptocurrencies and other like things like NFTs or that nature, probably not NFTs, but maybe cryptos. Is there any sort of like plan on the part of the state to do any sort of involvement as far as like owning and holding cryptocurrencies goes, speculating, I guess, as far as cryptocurrencies or anything of that nature?
Yeah, so we're going to have a presentation next week at our board meeting in Kodiak on cryptocurrency for board members and the public, just to help people sort of wrap their heads around what this is and what its role is. We, like most institutional investors like us, are sitting on the sidelines watching. It's really important that we not be viewed as speculators or taking sort of, speculation is probably the best word for this. I will say, though, that we like venture capital. We do a lot of investing in venture capital. And when you are in venture capital, there are a number of provisions to be paid in cryptocurrency under some of the schemes that are in that space. You know, there's a lot of forward-leaning tech ideas. And so we do allow that in those investment agreements, but so far we've collected all of our earnings in U.S. dollars or allowed foreign currencies. But I suspect there will come a day where we'll start getting payments in crypto from certain investments.
Is there ever some point that you think far in the future that Alaskans might be redeeming their PFD checks by virtue of cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I do. I I think that, you know, this whole idea of decentralized finance is really interesting. And I think that it's the disruption it's causing, the efficiency it can create, the lower cost by getting out some of the infrastructure that runs up costs within the finance system today, means it's entirely possible down the road. It's probably closer in time than where I'm at with this, which means it may be in 20 years as opposed to 50 years, but I do think it's on the horizon.
Okay, well, enough questions about meme stocks and cryptos. Part of the reason we're talking today is, of course, for the fact that you guys are coming into town here in Kodiak to have your meeting of the Board of Trustees. Can you just give the folks at home a rundown of what that is and how the general public can participate?
Sure. So the Board of Trustees meets quarterly. This will be their annual meeting. So it's an important meeting where they will accept the annual audited financial statements. They will adopt a budget proposal for fiscal year 2023 and forward that to the governor. And they'll review performance. And we're going to have a couple of really great education sessions on private credit, private debt around the world, cryptocurrency, one of those things that I mentioned. And the meetings are always a combination of work in terms of taking actions, as well as trying to get up to speed on various investment topics. So we look forward to being in Kodiak and being able to continue to have our meeting in person. Of course, we're always, we're going to be following all the city's guidelines in terms of safety. So continue to keep an eye on any COVID-related items that may come out. It feels like every day that changes, not necessarily from Kodiak, but just in general. And we do have public participation at the beginning of our meeting. So to the extent the public wants to make comments about anything they might be concerned, they are free to come or to call in with those comments. And all of that information is available on our website. We have the agenda posted. Please go to apfc.org, and you can get the information on all of that.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it once again, Angela. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.